$80 million company.
Started Kaleidoscope Hair Studio. Mm-hmm. It was the scariest thing in the world. The deposit was $1,800, so that left me with $200 in my name.
Oh, wow. You'll have a group of people who say, oh, these are tax write-offs. She needs to shelter some money before the end of the year.
I choose to take money and reward the people that have been with me for a while.
You make it hard for other CEOs.
I don't lead with my accomplishments. I never have.
The conditions were the worst they've ever experienced. You're unprofessional.
People want to be treated better than the value that they bring.
What were you doing to make them talk about you?
A lot of people want the paycheck before they even show the proof. Now I'm being sued. Being in a relationship and having a business with somebody, y'all have to agree on the things. I was miserable. God told me to move.
$80 million brand, not even in the top 10.
The more I grow, the more I know how small I am right now.
Is this your billion-dollar idea?
I think so.
Welcome to another episode of Full Transparency with Donnie Wiggins, where I give you a fly-on-the-wall perspective of entrepreneurship and some exciting entrepreneurs who are doing all the entrepreneuring behind the entrepreneurship. And today, I am so excited. You guys, I got to tell you, when I was coming up in the space of digital products, when I thought I wanted to be like this mega entrepreneur in the beauty industry, hair care, makeup, all of the things, this woman inspired me the most. She also showed me the evidence of the kind of work that it takes to be super successful in that industry. And I said, no, we're going to do something else. So I am super excited to have someone who I am so inspired by, Miss Jessica Dupart, here on the sofa with us. Hey, Jessica.
Hey.
How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. I am so excited to have you here. I have been trying to get you here for a minute, and it feels like I'm having like my own little girl celebrity crush right now. So I'm excited. We're going to get to know each other, you guys. So I don't really know Jessica. We are going to unfold and have conversation with her as they get to know you. I'm about to get to know you.
Okay.
And the first thing, like, I got to know, you have a hair care line, mm-hmm. Kaleidoscope Products, that is literally, I was telling my engineer before you came in, that this line can be found anywhere that you can purchase hair care products. You are a young Black woman who is out here in one of the most difficult industries to operate in. What is the secret behind the success of Kaleidoscope?
I feel like it's going to sound real cliche, but just being yourself. I think the reason I was able to go so far was being authentic. It was scary at first because, you know, it looks like, hey, to be successful, you have to do all of these things and all of the things that you see. But that was boring to me. Mm-hmm. It was stupid and dumb and boring. Mm-hmm. I'm the person that, in real time, we remade the cop show. We bought some costumes from Party City, and we knocked on people's doors and slicked their edges down and recorded it and put it on social media. Like, I'm the person that's going to remake, like, a Cardi B song. Like, I feel like a lot of other brands, and no shade to them at all, but a lot of other brands are kind of conservative. Mm-hmm. And I just do what I feel.
Do you feel like there's pros and cons to it, though? Like, there's already, like, this stigma in mm-hmm. the beauty industry that is overrun by other races. And you come in and we have super urban marketing, very, very catchy in the Black community. Do you feel like that type of marketing choice has kept you out of certain places, or has it helped you to grow?
That's a good question. I just was talking about that yesterday. So I feel like, of course, you're going to be judged, right? Mm-hmm. But knowing your audience and knowing what your audience is entertained by, like, okay, yes, we might have 15-20% of people saying, did you have to do all of that? Like, for Essence, we showed up really, really disruptive. Mm-hmm. Like, I wrapped the bus. I got twerkers. I got Kaleidoscope put across their little booty shorts. And we tore up the streets of New Orleans. We went through the Essence Fest, got on the stages, like, did the whole entire thing. We were the most disruptive brand that year. Mm-hmm. So you have the people that'll say, it don't take all of that to sell hair products, whatever, whatever. We had the most impressions that weekend.
Okay.
And you have brands that are out there that are 10 times bigger than me, mm-hmm. you know. So that's the good side of it. But the bad side of it is, when I'm trying to attract talent, C-suite and above.
Yes.
The people that don't understand that type of marketing, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Until sometimes you can't get a meeting with somebody like that. Mm-hmm. But when you do, I leave with my numbers. Because, yeah, I know what it looks like. But those same things, I could prove to you that those same things that I did actually garnered sales. Mm-hmm. So, like, when people take time to learn the fact that disruptive marketing actually makes us money, you know, like they connect it the same way people do a billboard, mm-hmm. and it's awareness. I just do awareness a little bit different. I do awareness that you're not going to forget about.
Mm-hmm. You absolutely do awareness that you're not going to forget about. So I don't know if you know, I'm a business coach and I like to focus on teaching people business that's sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe that disruptive marketing has been here, you know, since the beginning of time. It just looks very, very different right now. And disruptive marketing is a staple. So that means that it's sustainable marketing nonetheless. When you decided to go that route, were you afraid to put out like your very first kind of racy, unorthodox marketing campaign?
No.
No?
I wasn't. I think, so I did, 2 days ago, I released a diss track.
Wait.
To all of the brands. I did. since that's what's
to
going.
All of the brands?
All of them.
You mentioned their names?
No.
Okay.
I did not, but I started the song off with fuck your brand and that shit you sell.
So, what?
Yes. So
fuck your brand and that shit you sell.
Yes. Hey. That is the beat. Right. That's the actual beat. So that I was a little bit apprehensive about. But it was only because I don't want to stir confusion, because I know it's all in fun, and I will want the other brands to jump on and respond because it's all in fun,
for
right?
For sure.
The only reason I had a little bit of apprehension is I didn't want our consumers and their consumers to fight. Mm. You see what I'm saying? I didn't want somebody, yeah, this kaleidoscope better than such and such. Or, you know, I didn't want that. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, no, I was not. No, I'm not. Now, I do have, I'm really hard on myself, I'll tell you that. So I do get nervous to put something out to make sure that it produces. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because it's racy.
So what's the goal of the diss track?
At the time. So first of all, let's just be very clear.
Okay.
Kaleidoscope put out a blue bottle, black top. Nobody was doing it at the time.
Okay. Okay. I see. I see where this is going.
At the time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff has happened in these years. Right? Mm-hmm. But don't you ever forget about where it started from or where the original is. So it's, we have, our Miracle Drops is our hero product. And I feel like we talk about it and people know me for doing like running up on celebrities doing all of that. But I think y'all forgot. Mm. So I felt like it had to be like a reminder that.
Don't play with me.
That just don't play with me. Don't play with my product. Our shit works. Our shit been working. Our shit is the stuff that people duplicated.
Yeah.
They took it and they went in their lab and reverse engineered it and put it on the market. Like they duplicated it.
Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot. So other than diss tracks, how do you deal with that? Because there are so many entrepreneurs who'll be watching this and they're at home holding their idea close to their chest because they're afraid that somebody's going to copy their idea. And you've been getting copied for years.
And everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody. And mm-hmm. you can't prevent it.
Yeah.
There's no, you cannot prevent it. You literally, so it's either you go to market and sell and make your money, mm-hmm. or you just hold it and it never happens, and then eventually somebody comes up with that idea anyway. Mm-hmm. If you're good, you're gonna be duped. That's the truth. That is just a part of the game.
Yeah.
So I feel like if it gets crunchy, if it gets messy, if it interferes with your business, like 1 year, I had a company that sold over $1 million worth of my product, but it didn't come from me.
What?
Right. And so that was a whole thing. They sold it in the underground beauty world market because the main distributor that I was buying from, he found out because, you know, he got all the accounts. So he was selling it at a lesser price than what I sell it to to the beauty stores for. So this was a beauty store thing.
Did he recreate it or did he steal some of your actual product?
He got blue bottles, black tops, printed out my label. And I don't know what the hell was in the bottle.
People knocking off hair products?
Yes. That is illegal as fuck. You know how hard it was to track this person down?
And so then what happens? Like, what's the consequence
for that? To this day, I can't tell you that I've identified them totally. I got a private investigator and everything. A lot of people don't want to answer questions and be involved. They led me to this place in Houston where manufacturing was happening, and a private investigator sat outside, waited for the person to come in and out to see if we could see any of the things. We tried to make a fake order from them, but it was a one-time run, and I think they must have got whiffed that we was on them. But yeah, it was like $1,000,007.
You know what's crazy is there is a lot of, in the entrepreneur space period right now, there's a lot of like beef and drama. And I was talking to a person.
For what?
For what? For what? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on. This person is more successful than this person. This person is calling this person a scammer. Like, it's just all kinds of stuff that happens, right? And I was telling my homegirl the other day, like, when I started in entrepreneurship, I just wanted to be my own boss. Like, that's it. I didn't expect it to come with more drama than my life as someone in corporate America. Mm-hmm. But even listening to what you even experienced, like, did you ever see yourself as a CEO having to hire private investigators to track down people who were attempting to scam your product?
No, but I can also tell you, I never had a real job, right? So what I mean by that is I started off as a hairstylist.
Okay.
So when you brought up the corporate world thing, like, I feel like people always want to talk about how, you know, I've been an entrepreneur all this time. That's all cool and dandy, but I don't know what the fuck onboarding is.
Yes.
I don't know what the fuck a title, and like, I don't know that the title, the salary supposed to, I let bitches call themselves whatever they want to call themselves. But now if you done called yourself a director, this or that, I let you call yourself the Queen of Sheba over here. But now I gotta pay you Queen of Sheba money.
Right. Right. Let's talk about it, because companies like yours, you've generated, people don't like to disclose their revenue. Seven figures, check.
We are to date probably made close to $80
million. $80 million. Mm-hmm. An $80 million company. Do you honestly believe that at the level that you've reached so far, do you believe that you've even attracted your A players yet?
No.
Yeah.
No, and it's like the more you grow, the more you learn. And the more I grow, the more I know how small I am right now. And so, like, to the average person or somebody that might see, hey, you're successful, you see that another. When you talk about these big dogs and in the big world, I am a very little fish. Like, I had a, we traveled to CVS. We had to do a line review. Line review is when you get in front of the buyer and say, hey, guys, I have this. We want you to put it on your shelves, right? Or just to talk about the business that you already have. It's once a year. So at the line review, they also present, you know, like the data on different things. Kaleidoscope is not even in the top 10. As much money as we make.
$80 million brand, not even in the top 10. That's insane to me. To even hear you call yourself a small fish is insane to me. How big of a company are you planning to build?
I want to go as far as I can. I just feel like...
Is this your billion-dollar idea?
I want to go as far as I can. Can it reach a billion? I think so.
Okay.
Will I be sane enough to be able to make it? I'd have to see. Because the bigger it gets, the crazier it gets. The bigger it gets, the more stressful it gets. The bigger it gets, like, I think... People make a decision at some point. Do I just want this money? Or do I want to continue the stress? You know what I'm saying? So I definitely think it could hit a billion. But will I be willing to sit through all of that? I just don't know.
I mean,
you have, you know, all of the things, like people talk about the acquisitions, the people coming in and changing around your thing. And it's already complicated trying to get good talent to understand how we operate. So then when you talk about anybody that's coming in that would want to have to invest anything and try to structure anything, I think because I am different, you know, people always say that, but literally because I am different and I do things different. I know my consumer very well. I speak to my consumer very well. Our click-through rate is crazy. Our retention rate when it comes to our SMS email is crazy. Like, but how we do it is so not the norm. And a lot of people are scared to touch those kind of things because they feel like it might either be something temporary, it might be something trending, it might be that, versus looking at the picture of even if we're jumping on those things continue to happen.
Yeah.
The trends continue to happen.
They continue to happen.
The disruption has to continue to happen.
So if you know that your way of building your business not necessarily turns away A players, but it kind of scares them, it makes them very apprehensive, do you think that your strategy should be to find B players and train them to be A players? Or are you still going to go out there? Because I believe that in order for you to find A players, you really got to go and take them from somebody else, right? They're already somewhere. They're working. They're stable. They may be a little unhappy. Their voice might not be getting heard at this time. But you really just got to go and poach them. Do you believe that the better strategy for you right now is to continue to convince an A player that your company is home for them? Or do you just take B players and train them to be A players?
I'm not convincing no fucking body of nothing. Okay. That's first. Let me be very clear.
Very clear.
I realize that there's a certain personality type that I don't do well with.
Okay.
And it just seems as though the higher up the rank somebody gets, I don't lead with my accomplishments. I never have. And I never knock nobody that does. Like, I'm not going to walk in a room and say, like, oh, you know, I did this, I did that, I did that. I don't do that. Like, I don't know if it's humble. I don't know if it's shy. I don't know what it is, but I just don't do that. But they have a lot of people that do that, and they lean on that. And then it's, you know, like, people want it to be treated, especially people that have come from other places and they're scorned. People want to be treated better than the value that they bring. And so I think that's the issue that I have. It's like, I never mind paying people their worth, and then even more so. And then when you show up and do your thing, I even celebrate you. And that's me with words, and that's me financially celebrating you. But I found a lot of people want the paycheck before they even show the proof, you know, that action can happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have a fee, let me pay your fee, but don't expect your fee to be up here if you haven't shown any proof that you can even move the needle a notch.
Yeah.
So I think what I've been doing most recently is finding the personality types in the pool of the people that's out there and dating them. And what I mean by that is, before you even get on my team, like, there's somebody that I talk to probably 2 to 3 times a week. She does not work for me at all. She works at a whole nother company, but we just check in. Like, when you ready to leave, girl,
you know
what I'm right here. Right, yeah. Right, but not.
But you've been courting her throughout this process.
Yeah, it's probably been about, it's probably been since December. And so I feel like, because she a heavy hitter. She a heavy hitter.
To work with somebody like you, who's also a heavy hitter, you're busy, you're on the go, you want stuff done. I see the way you execute, like, you're on top of these trends. I would imagine even the diss track is inspired by the Kendrick and Drake beef that's out, or diss tracks that's out right now. So you respond to the marketplace very quickly. What personality type works for you versus what type doesn't?
I don't want to say the A type doesn't. I'm going to say being a small business, and being an entrepreneur business, the thing about people that work with us, you can't just wear one hat. So when you have those people that are closed-minded to where I'm only wearing this hat, because what happens is the company could grow in a week dramatically. So the role that you had, I still want to keep you here. We might have to shift you a little bit. I'm not going to make you from being like the secretary to being a janitor, you know, but sometimes you have to wear a different hat for a season, or sometimes you have to wear multiple hats for a season, or sometimes you have to do that. And for the people that aren't open to do that, I think those are the ones that, the people that are so restrictive in their mind to the things that I don't do.
I only do this.
Right.
I'm correct. Only your executive assistant.
Well, please don't put no meetings on my schedule after 12.
What? because we don't close until 5, baby. What do you mean? The whole day could be a meeting for you.
You know, the people that have the restrictions and the limits and all of that.
Yes.
Those are the things that I think I do not do well with, because I don't have any, like, when it comes to me with the person.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like, if somebody comes in, I give them full creative control. Like, it's a thing. Like, I let you show up however you want to show up and prove your how you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am, I'm not micromanaging. I don't beat you down. Mm-hmm. I understand people make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't just fire you behind a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's some benefits over here. So I think I just require a certain personality type and a certain person because of the people that I already have here that I value.
Yeah.
And then for my own sanity. So me and my wife don't go to jail.
That's a whole fact. When you are in a situation where you identify that you have team members that are just not a good fit, how do you deal with that?
It depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've had that happen before, and I was in contract, and I just cut it. I cut ties. I didn't even do the, I'm not from corporate. I didn't do the paperwork trail and the,
right.
the
no
you know,
slip.
Giving the notice, it, no, giving, oh, hey, you know, you didn't turn this in on time and set. So I just like, this ain't gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
But then because I have a contract, now I'm being sued.
Gotcha.
Because there was no reason for termination. Bitch, we fought every day.
Every day.
You fought with the Sally buyer.
You know what's up.
You messing up my big million-dollar relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know why you fired?
Mm-hmm.
But because there was no record of it.
Yes. Hey, CEO Donnie Wiggins here, and I am so excited to announce my new mentorship group is dropping. You may have already heard about it, but I wanted you to hear it from the horse's mouth, directly from me. My new mentorship group, Actionable CEO, for entrepreneurs who are interested in professional growth, personal growth, and financial growth. You want to learn from me. Y'all have been asking for this for the last 3 years, and I have finally brought Actionable CEO back to serve you. Every single week, direct mentorship from me. You will also hear from other people who are in my community that I believe will be greatly impactful to you. You're going to get behind the scenes. We're going to be spending some time together live. This is not pre-recorded. This is live mentorship. So if you are an entrepreneur and you want to be connected, feel connected, you want to elevate your brand, you want to elevate your life, you want to elevate your level of success, Actionable CEO is for you. ActionableCEO.com. See you there.
So now I just learned that depending on the situation, if I have a contract with somebody, I'm just going to make sure to document all of the things that I said that were errors.
Even if you don't have a contract, document everything that you said are errors, because everybody will try to sue you. And even if it's not a lawsuit that they can win, it's still an inconvenience and a waste of your time. But we are in this season right now of litigation, people pretending like they don't know what they did wrong. You know what you did wrong. You know what you did wrong. And they're going to try to sue you because it makes the blogs. It makes social media. It grows their following. It gets them ready for their next opportunity. Document everything.
And then I found out this person sued the last person that was working for. I said, why no fucking body told me this? Why y'all saw that this person was coming over here. Nobody was going
to
say nothing.
Was it public information that they sued the person that they worked for before? Or did they have to go digging for that?
That's a good question. I didn't look. I didn't know. But that's what I'm telling you. I'm not doing it. I'm not. It's somebody we have. I didn't have a permanent HR person until recently. Now I have a permanent HR mm-hmm. person. Because, bitch, I can't deal with all of this. I can't, because if people talk to me, I'm going to talk to them like a person.
Right.
I don't know that I can't say these things.
I don't know that I can't ask you what you do in your free time on the weekends, because you know you can't. Like in an interview process, if you say like, if you say things like, so what do you and your spouse do, or, you know, on the weekends, that can be considered an unethical question to ask.
See,
there's certain like, oh, how old are you? Mm-mm. Whatever information you requested on the application, generally you have to stay in that lane. I come from corporate, a background in corporate. So these are things that luckily I learned, you know, at that time. But you have to be very, very careful about asking people personal questions about their lives, because if they know their employee rights, they can sue you for everything.
Right. Even down to calling people after hours.
Down to calling people, texting them on the weekends, asking them to do you a quick favor. Don't ask somebody to do a quick favor on their day off and then you don't pay them any extra for it. They're documenting that. And the minute that they can use that against you, they will. The minute that they can use it against you, they absolutely will. And that's like the challenge for me with building business. It's like you create these relationships with people that you believe are down for the cause. They see the vision. They want to buy into it. And it's like Beyonce's song, "The First Time I Say No." Mm-hmm. The first time there's a disagreement, it's like you build this trust and you put all this trust in your teammates. And then when it's time to separate, something happens. Now you're the worst employer. Mm-hmm. The conditions were the worst they've ever experienced. You're unprofessional. You're this, that, and the other. And you're like, wait, it was just good a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most difficult part, like really getting the right team in place.
Yeah, I think for me, I have about 5 core people
mm-hmm.
that have been with me.
Mm-hmm.
Our personality types mesh really well.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is they've been with me. So that means all of us only have a certain amount of knowledge. All of us. Mm. So something has to be brought in mm-hmm. to be able to elevate us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it gets like, for people that are used to something, somebody coming in being over me, or, you know, like, I've been doing this job for this long. Now I got somebody coming in that's going to tell me what to do. What is that? You know, like that there's a little bit of resistance, but I feel like once somebody realizes that it's beneficial for them and it's elevating them as well, because now you're learning, you know, like the processes and the structures and a mm-hmm. better way to do things as we grow. But the people that I have, I value them a lot. Like I have one person, she was in social. We moved her to ads. Now I have her working. I have her being trained specifically on new product development.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she's my ride or die, because
wherever you need her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We need more people like that. I believe there's a very valuable.
And wait, and she gets paid for it.
She gets paid for it.
It ain't just she gets her raises. She does. She gets celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
Got a car for Christmas. All the things.
First of all, let's talk about these cars that you get for Christmas, because I've seen you make it hard for other CEOs, holiday time, birthday times, company anniversaries. You have such a giving spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the comments when you do things like this, especially around like Christmas time, and you'll have a group of people who say, oh, these are tax write-offs. She needs to shelter some money before the end of the year. But I feel a different spirit is attached to your giving. Like, what makes you reward your employees in this way? For the perks alone, people should be willing to do an excellent job for you.
So my mom always tells the story that when I used to go to school, at the end of the day, they used to give us 2 cookies, and I would always come home with one. I would have eaten one, but I always come home with one and give it. I used to give it to my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a person that, like, I have been a giver. Like, being a giver actually makes my heart smile. So it's selfish while being selfless. And for people that say stuff like that, tax write off my ass. It is, right? Mm-hmm. So it is stuff. It's employee incentives for me. But I also can employee incentive my ass a car myself.
For sure.
So I choose to take money
mm-hmm.
and reward the people that have been with me for a while, that have been working the hardest, the people mm-hmm. that, you know, like, I specifically during the year pay attention mm-hmm. to everybody, their life, where there's a deficit, something that might be like a dream. Like right now, one of my employees, I'm sending him and his whole family to Disney World. They never been.
That's a dream of theirs.
Something, yeah. So it's like, okay, and it's not Christmas, and I'm not even posting about it, but that's just, I appreciate these people, and I would never want to take them for granted or want them to think that I take them for granted. Mm-hmm. So I'm just really, like, especially around Christmas time, I then do some full investigations. I call their friends. I call everybody and try to figure out what's going on, what they need, you know. Like, I think the prior year, I think I got everybody dogs.
Wait, what?
It was puppies. Yeah, it was a whole bunch of puppies. Yeah, I got like four dogs. And they were so cute. They were like so, you know.
Do these people still work with you?
Yes.
These are the key people that have been on team with you. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because I would really be, I'm a giver too, but I'm also like, I'm giving because you've earned it and you're valuable to me. Mm-hmm. If I give you this as a team member and you like leave me soon after, I'm definitely in my feelings.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be. Because I feel like I've gotten the reaction that I get when I see when people receive. Mm-hmm. I'd be good. That make my heart smile. I'd be good with that. Mm-hmm. I do. I'd really be good with that.
Okay. I like that. Tell me, Jessica, I be wanting to call you Judy so bad.
I answer to both.
Tell me, what was the motivation behind Kaleidoscope in the first place?
I'm a licensed hairstylist. Did hair years. Mm-hmm. Started doing hair at a very young age. I used to do my dad's hair. He used to let me sit on his back and just put a whole bunch of borettes in his head. They would get all tangled and everything. Mm-hmm. So I pursued that. My parents didn't really want me to pursue that. My mm-hmm. parents were sending me to Catholic school. They wanted a doctor or a lawyer. At the time, like, hairstylists are in now.
For sure.
But back then,
getting all the money now.
Back then, it was a weekend job.
Yeah.
It was something to do on the side.
$25. It
wasn't set. Right. It wasn't glorified or anything. Yeah. So when I said I wanted to do that, my parents weren't necessarily in support of it. So I used to, after school, I would like sneak people in, do their hair and everything. So my parents, and I guess I was kind of a rebellious child. I put out of all the schools I was at. Yeah, I did. I went to, for my senior year, end of my junior year, because I got put out to start school. The end of my junior year. No, for real. It's so bad.
For fighting?
A little bit of everything.
A little bit. Okay.
So let me see. What was it? I went to Cabrini High School. That's, you know, where you wear the long skirts mm-hmm. and the blazers. And school started in August. I got put out by November. It was for bullying, I think. But I wasn't really bullying nobody. It was... Anyway. It was me. I was having confrontations with a girl. And okay. It was a Caucasian type school.
So got you.
I went to another school. Got put out for sneaking in the boys' bathroom. A friend of mine was in there. He had an iguana. And I wanted to see his iguana. I remember that like it was yesterday.
Okay, pause. Went in the boys' bathroom. He had an iguana, and I want to see his iguana. Now that could go so. You mean
it was so a many real? No, ways. It was a real iguana. Though it was. He had an iguana. He called me in, and I went in there. So, but now I already had disciplinary stuff going on. So that was just the last straw. So I got put out of that school. That was Warren Easton, and so my parents put me in John McDonough High School, and John McDonough had a cosmetology program. Mm-hmm. So it was like right up my alley because when I was at those other schools, I was doing my hair, doing my friend's hair. I went to Ben Franklin between that. You ever heard of Ben Franklin?
Yeah. So I'm originally from New Orleans.
Okay.
And yep. And
born and raised?
Born and raised, but I moved here around the age of 10 permanently.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Elementary school permanently. And my family, I went to Claiborne and a little bit of St. Aug. Mm-hmm. And my family went to, McDonald and Warren Easton.
Yeah, 35. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I went to, when I got put out of Warren Easton, my mama convinced them that I put it on my record because I got accepted at Ben Franklin. So I went to Ben Franklin. I wound up pregnant.
Okay.
Ben Franklin wanted me to leave and go to the non-traditional school for people mm-hmm. that's pregnant. My parents ain't let that happen. So, yeah, because you're not about to put her out for being pregnant.
Right.
And they couldn't.
Okay.
So I stayed at Ben Franklin for like 2 years. Because Cabrini and Warren Easton was my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 2 in 1 year.
Okay.
Then I went to Ben Franklin my sophomore year and most of my junior year. But I wasn't doing right over there. There was one class I just didn't even go to. And so, but you know, Ben Franklin, they have a lot of advanced stuff. So mm-hmm. I wound up transferring to John McDonald.
Okay.
That had cosmetology, but I had all my credits. So all I had to take was English 4. And then for the rest of the day, I was able to take cosmetology and get my hours.
Okay.
Because Ben Franklin, you know, they overdid it. Mm-hmm. So I had to graduate. You only needed so many credits. So all I had to take was one class.
Okay.
And then I got to do half of the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it wound up being good that I was getting kicked out, I guess.
So now you are pregnant. That's your first child?
Yes. I was pregnant with my first child. Yep. Yep. Pregnant. My first child at Ben Franklin.
So
I had my first child at Ben Franklin.
Okay.
Not at the school, but then I left and mm-hmm. went to John Mack and got pregnant again.
Wait a minute, Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on?
I was rebellious. I was rebellious. I had a boyfriend at the time.
Okay. You know? Y'all was doing boyfriend and girlfriend stuff.
Yeah.
But pregnant twice, high school.
Yeah, I had 3 children before the age of 19 and a miscarriage in between.
Wow. Mm-hmm. 3 kids, age of 19. Now all the cards by society standards are stacked against you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you stay in a long-term relationship with their father?
We stayed in a relationship for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I got put out. So for my graduation, it was graduation time. I did not attend my high school graduation. I wound up, that was when I was pregnant. So I had Deja at 15.
My daughter's name is Deja.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had Deja at 15. I had Byron at 17. I wound up pregnant with the twins. My mama found out. She put me out. All of this is around graduation time, so I didn't attend my graduation. I had a miscarriage with the twins.
Okay.
And then wound up, when I went to go do my checkup, they said, you know, you're pregnant again. So I was pregnant with my last child. Well, not now, but my last child at the time. And had my last child at 19. Yeah. And just had to mommy. So I started mommying and doing hair. My parents put me out. I moved
where do
in.
You live?
I moved in with my baby daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived with his mom. And then eventually we didn't get along.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad came and got me. He put me over his shoulder. He came and got me and told me to leave. Because I was calling complaining every day. Because I was listening to them talk. They used to talk about me. Him and his mom used to talk about me. And I used to hear it.
And what?
Damn, I feel like this is a lot.
Why are they talking about you, though, Jessica? Like, what were you doing to make them talk about you?
Just different things. That's when I realized my baby daddy was messy. Anyway, that's totally real.
I mean, that's not abnormal, though, for a lot of people.
Yeah. So I told my dad, he eventually came and got me. He let me move into his mom's house. His mom, my grandmother, who was living at the time, had dementia.
Okay.
So they moved her out of her house into a nursing home so she could be watched. Because people used to leave her notes at the door to send money.
Mm-hmm.
And she would give it. Like, she, you know, she was losing herself. So he moved me into her house. And from there, I did hair out the house. Yeah, I did hair out the house for a while.
Is that when you started to also create your own products?
I didn't create my own products until 2013. So that was years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So what pushed me to create my own products, as working in a salon, damn, they got a lot to go. So I had a relationship and me and my partner had a barber beauty salon.
Okay.
Any beauty salon you go to, people come in and they sell stuff. They sell food, they sell whatever. Well, they also sell, they used to, and I don't think they do this anymore, but they used to come in and sell products. Mm-hmm. Like this was back when the Relaxers was out and it was the thing where you get, I used to buy by the drones, the oil to put on your scalp to prevent, you know, your hair from burning with the Relaxers. So different people would come in and then somebody was like, you should sell your own products. I was like, I charge, and this is back then, I charge $250 for a sewing. I'm not about to pop.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Charge $5 for no spritz.
Right. Spritz?
Right. I charge $2.50 for a sewing. What do I look like? And eventually, they convinced me to try it, to do it. So I...
This was a customer?
Somebody that sold it. Not a customer, but yeah, somebody that sold it. I had a client... Damn, I got a lot of stories. I had a client that cheated on me for another hairstylist.
Okay.
And she came back and she had a circular ball spot at the top of her head because she got a ponytail with a bobby pin. I did my ponytails without bobby pins.
Mm-hmm. Okay, signature. Signature method.
And so I felt the need to try to bring her hair back. So as this stuff is happening, somebody's trying to convince me to make products. And I was like, well, can I make something to top of her head? Because I had to grow her hair to the middle of her fucking back.
Okay.
So, the guy that told me that, I said, well, you going to help me, you know, you going to help me do it? And he gave me the contact information for the people that were making his stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not normal. I know, usually have to work really hard for that. But he gave me, because I had been buying products from him for a while, he gave me the contact information for the people that was making his stuff. And I was in a relationship with somebody and we had a business, but I had bigger ideas. And being in a relationship and having a business with somebody, y'all have to agree on the things.
Yes.
My ideas was always up here.
Okay.
Hers was like right here. No shade. It's just that I always wanted to do, like, I want a commercial on TV, you know, or I want to do these things. Let's have ongoing ads on the radio on the weekend to attract more people. Like, I had all of these things. And you can't be mad that somebody doesn't see the vision that God has for your life. So... Yeah. I decided to leave because we had a business together. I left that business and started Kaleidoscope Hair Studio. Mm-hmm. It was the scariest thing in the world because I only had $2,000 in my bank account. Hurricane season was coming. Mm-hmm. You know, when hurricane season's coming, you can't spend all your money because you don't know what the fuck about to happen.
Right.
So I had $2,000 in my bank account. Hurricane season was coming. And God told me to move. And I was like, well, it according to my numbers... This don't seem like this ain't give me 16 months, you know, like nah. He's like, nah, move. Cause I was miserable.
Are you talking about miserable in New Orleans, just period?
No, in the relationship and in the business, I was not happy. I felt so boxed in. Yeah.
Started a business together.
Correct.
Okay.
I had a business with a person that I was in a relationship with. We had a barber and beauty salon and it grew to have two locations. And I just wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. I felt really restricted and it felt so painful to be stuck inside of something and not be able to grow. It's like a tree is trying to grow and it has a box over it. Mm-hmm. So, God told me to move and I looked around and they had a place that the deposit was $1,800. So that left me with $200 to my name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I feel like that one act of faith has made me fearless because I used to be a planner. I used to write everything. I used to I have to this day documented, handwritten stuff that I made in like 2009 to compare it year over year. Like, so me being a planner, giving that money went against everything that I was used to doing. But then once I did that and I saw that I didn't die, that I was able to find and go get some more money. It forced me to have to figure it out because now I have this place. Now I have these bills. What are you going to do? So then I started working 7 days a week. I didn't care what time. If you need your hair done 3 o'clock in the morning, you was getting it done because now I had a goal to meet. So once I did that, I feel like that thing, as small as it might have been at the time, causes me to not be afraid to scale every time I have to. Because scaling right now is expensive as hell and it's going down to zero. It is. Yeah, I know you wanted this car, but this $1.6 million needs to go directly into inventory right now. Right. You ain't going to have no money left.
Right.
And Walmart and them ain't going to pay you for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
But you have an opportunity to have more stores with them.
Mm-hmm.
You have an opportunity to do this. So, yes, it's painful and it's scary.
Yeah.
But since I did it once, even at a smaller scale, I'm not scared to do it at all.
Yeah, all the faith in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It really takes all the faith in the world to build your, I mean, to even start your business. Conversations about scaling are on a whole other level. Just to even get it started. Do you remember getting to your first six figures?
I do and I don't. Because I was trying to count it during the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
And since I did my I started in a July.
Okay.
By December, it wasn't it.
Okay.
I didn't realize that I had hit it because I was fiscal in it. I was January to December in it.
Yeah.
And when I finally realized I hit it, it wasn't even 100. It had been like two something or something.
Okay.
So I don't know if my mind is just 2 weeks ahead. I was trying to see it in a certain time frame,
okay,
like within that, or even so within a month. You know what I'm saying? Like, damn, I made 10,000. How can I make 100,000 in this month?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I remember looking back and being like, damn, why didn't you know that you hit this milestone, that milestone, this milestone? Because I was so focused on this other milestone,
mm-hmm,
that I done tripped and stumbled over the other two in front of it and didn't even see it.
What about your first million? Do you remember that?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I don't know what it was supposed to feel like, you know, but I'm not going to say it just was like.
It didn't feel like anything to you?
Well, I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
I'm a person and I'm trying to be better about it. When stuff like that happens, it then makes me say, let's go do 2 million. Like my mind celebrates for 3.2 seconds,
yeah,
and then is thinking, if you were able to do this,
yeah,
imagine if you changed this, where we could go, and let's go start doing it.
I feel you on that. When I hit my first million, I set an intentional goal. Like, I remember me and my business partner, David Shands, we literally set our goal at the same time. I think it was 2021 on a podcast episode. We like, why haven't we made $1 million yet? And we agreed to be accountability partners. We end up hitting that number. And every single, like, I don't remember if it was every week or every day, we're on the phone like, yo, where you at? Where you at on your goal? Because the number is $83,333.33 a month, mm-hmm, to hit $1 million at minimum. So I'm like, where you at this month? He's calling me like, where are you at? And by the time I hit it with 2 months to spare in the year. So I was excited. Thank you. I was excited that it didn't take the whole year, but all I did was call my mom. And I remember the journey up to it. Mm-hmm. Like every single month, I was just sending her screenshots of my, mm-hmm, Stripe account. Like, my, look what I made this month. Look, look, look. And she's so excited. And honestly, Jessica, I was more excited about her excitement, mm-hmm, than the numbers actually adding up. But when I hit it, I called my mom. I might have called my daughter, Deja. There was no shout out on the social media,
right,
no dinner, no nothing. Just like you, I immediately said, I wonder if I can do 1.5 by the end of the year.
And you know what? People say that's bad. People say when you get like that, that's bad because you don't get to live in a moment. I live in a moment, but my moment is literally a moment.
A moment.
And I feel like stuff is so fictionalized and stuff is so fluffed.
Mm-hmm.
The expectation of when it happens, glitter falls out the sky. All of your problems are over. That ain't what the fuck happened.
No.
That's not what happened.
What happens?
Now that you're at a million, first of all, if you're doing a million, mm-hmm, that means that your business has bigger needs.
Mm-hmm.
That means now you have to, you probably have to hire out. That means you now have a couple of HR issues. That means all of the things are happening. Thank you, Million, that you're here.
Yeah.
Because for me, the difference between, they said this is so pivotal, but the difference between making $20 million a year and $40 million a year could take you out. So my focus right now has been what that looks like for the company, right? Mm-hmm. So $20 million took, you know, tears and sweat and all of the things and emotional turmoil and getting sued and all the rest of that shit. So going to $40 million, it's like, I'm a person, I'm not going to say I overly prepare, mm-hmm. but I feel like you got to be ready. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not, because right now, a lot of the retailers have done something called a unified set. So prior to the unified set, there's the multicultural aisle and then there's general market aisle. Mm-hmm. They have merged them together. So now I'm not only up against like brands, I'm up against Tresemme.
Revlon.
I'm, yes.
Vidal Sassoon.
Right. That's who I am now sitting next to. So now it's like sink or swim, bitch. Mm-hmm. What you about to do? Now it's that rugged marketing that you're doing, you have to also include Sarah.
That's what I mean, Jessica. So what do you do? You're sitting next to, in between Vidal and Tresemme. Now what? So
I feel like an easy answer, because I feel like it's not really complicated. I feel like an easy answer is to just talk to everybody without losing yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, I never want to be the same thing as everybody else. I never want to be not true to me. But it is okay to not be as urban all the time.
Okay.
So it is okay to have, like, one of the things I had to learn, because I love what I call edutainment. Mm-hmm. Which is entertainment, education at the same time.
Yep.
But then they have our consumers that love tutorials. I think that shit is fucking boring as hell. Mm-hmm. But it's not me that I'm selling to. So now it's making sure that we have educational entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's making sure we still have our ratchet. It's mm-hmm. making sure we still have the things that's authentic to us, but speaking to multiple people and not offending anybody. Meaning not going all the way left and, hi, this product sells, this is the, you know, right, not going right. all the way left, but giving all of the consumers something for their need. I feel like that is an easy fix. Just being more mindful of having a better mix of the things that people want to see when they come in for hair care, when they come in for stuff like that.
But is there anything wrong just remaining for Black people?
No, this is still for Black people.
Okay.
So, because the Black girls want the tutorials.
Okay.
They have the girls that are doing the ASMR and it is like, let's be clear.
Putting the microphone up on the drop, letting it hear.
Right, but that's all of that. They really have the girls that's like the aesthetics. Like, mm-hmm. that's what I'm saying, that kind of content. So, okay. So when I say Sarah also, she can either be white or Sarah can be Black and corporate.
Okay.
Sarah could be white with a Black child. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's so many different genres of people mm-hmm. that I could cater to. I just want the biggest messaging that I want anybody that deals with my company or has anything to do with Kaleidoscope is that I want for people to find beauty in them. Mm. Like, beauty has so many different standards set by the world, but everybody doesn't have the same thing. Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have people that go through life situations, whether it's cancer and they have to lose their hair. You have people that go through situations with mental health. You have all of these things. And sometimes it takes a lot for people just to get out the bed. So if them washing their face off, they feel beautiful, I support you in that. You are beautiful just like that. If you couldn't comb your hair today, you still beautiful to me. So I mm-hmm. feel like I want to represent that. No matter who I'm talking to, that's the core of who we have been. Like, I feel inclusivity right now is a thing because it's a fad. Mm-hmm. But I've been the person, like, we deal with people with alopecia. I support the people. I don't care if you got a relax. I don't care if you got colored hair. I don't care if you got weave. I don't care if you got braids. I don't care. Whatever it is that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. We have something for you. That's it.
Yeah. I think your whole life represents it, though. From the marketing style that you choose, it's like, look, this is what makes me happy. From the way that you dress, Judy, I be looking at some of your outfits like, yo, she's trying to get all the attention today, but it's not something that you find in mainstream malls, shopping centers, boutiques. You're literally living, like when I look at you, when I think of you, you are the epitome of living life by my own terms or on my own terms. Mm-hmm. And I love that about you. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what it's like to be this boss, this CEO building this empire. But you're also recently married in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And you have a new baby.
I do.
Yes. First of all, how old are your older kids?
26.
Lord, 20, Jesus.
Yeah, 26, 24, 23.
So,
and then I got a 10-month-old.
And then a 10-month-old. You know, I look at you, I look at Brad, your wife, I look at people like Janet Jackson, Gabrielle Union. My daughter is now 22. And one of the biggest, I think I'm comfortable calling it a regret now because I love to say I don't have regrets. But one of the biggest regrets that I have is that I didn't have more children. And I have been saying forever, you know, like, oh, I want another baby. I want another baby. I am 45.
Why you just don't have another one?
Because, I mean, I could. So I was open to it. I said that 45 was my cutoff. And here we go. 45. And in my mind, I just convinced myself that that's the cutoff. First of all, what is it like? How old are you, Jessica?
42.
How? Newborn, basically, at 42 years old. How is it different from when you had your children at 15 to 19?
First of all, your energy level is different.
That's my fear. What am I going to do with a newborn at 45?
You're going to love life.
I could barely.
You're going to love life. So for me, I felt like since I had children as a teenager, I didn't understand and appreciate all of the little things.
Okay.
And so now, especially having a baby with my wife who had never experienced pregnancy, never had a baby, watching her, you know, is just so fulfilling because there are things that, you know, like I know that a baby's going to poo on you and going to, you know, watching her experience all of the things and just being so enamored and so amazed by it is mm-hmm. just so fulfilling. And me being able to appreciate my son having his teeth, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. it's like the smallest little things and him making noises now, finding his voice and yelling and throwing food on the floor to the dogs on purpose. All of those things I feel like I appreciate more. And it's not that I didn't appreciate it back then, but right now, knowing that we had real intention about going make a child, and I had real intention about making sure that my wife had somebody that she was leaving behind. Mm. So it's just like a different experience.
Yeah. I will tell you that Brad is in my top three of favorite female rappers, right? I grew up in that era of So-So Def, taking over, you know, Atlanta. I believe we're close to the same age. I remember that when she showed up at an award show in a dress, like it was this white dress that she showed up in, body dumb banging. The world went crazy.
I know what you're talking about. It was a bodysuit.
It was a bodysuit. Mm-hmm. The world went crazy. Like, yeah, nobody.
She didn't have braids. She had a perm and she had her hair
pressed.
Yep.
And so the world goes crazy. I'm not going to lie, Jessica. When I saw Brad with a baby bump, I didn't know how to process it. I'm confused. Mm-hmm. The world goes crazy again. Watching her go through the journey of preparing to be a mom was one of the most interesting journeys that I have watched. How was that for you, though? I mean, because Brad is real oversized tee, baggy pants. How was it to see her go through that experience of pregnancy?
I made sure to document it for the world because mm-hmm. she's hilarious.
For sure.
It's just the funniest shit. Like, we are out having pizza. And she's just like, I got to start drinking milk. I'm like, what are you talking about? Where they come from? Well, how the baby gonna have milk if I don't drink milk? And I'm like, beautiful, that's not how it works.
I
promise you, your breasts will make because I don't drink milk. And I said, I'm just gonna put the fucking phone up because you are just hilarious. So she really thought, because even, come on now, somebody that never thought that they was gonna have a child, you don't remember that biology shit from a long time ago.
Right.
And it's all of the little different things that she, I think, wasn't prepared for. Like, when the baby turned and it was pressing on her bone, and she was like, he in my coochie? Like, she's like, do I need to wash it all day? Can he smell it?
Oh my God. I cannot. Yes. I remember seeing the video about the milk, and I'm like, wait, she actually kind of got a point. Where the milk just automatically suddenly come from, right? But it's just a natural instinct that you have as a woman, you know, to know that you're just going to end up producing milk. But when she said, "Kenny, smell my coochie," I said, "Lord Jesus." And she means it. She's so sincere.
In all honesty, if you think about it, I understood why. If something is in you right here.
Yes.
Then is it? Because then she was like, "I just need to be in the bathtub all the time. I don't want to pee." And did he spell it? I'm like, "Oh my God."
It don't work like that.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. What was the most fulfilling part of her pregnancy for you?
It's probably a few. I think when he moved the first time, mm-hmm. when she felt the move the first time, which mm-hmm. I documented for y'all, because mm-hmm. I thought it was good for the world to see. Because mm-hmm. she was crying. She wasn't boohoo crying, but she was just so elated. Mm-hmm. Him coming into the world, like, that was phenomenal because she got to see a human come out of her. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't believe it. She literally said, "This came out of me." Like, she could not fucking believe it. And then... at a certain age, they make you go to maternal fetal specialist. So it's not just a gynecologist and a maternal fetal specialist. Yeah. So we went to the maternal fetal specialist once a month in the beginning. And then you go like every other week towards the end. Then you go every week. So watching him grow. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing. Because she just was always excited to see how much bigger he was or to see, you know, what he was doing.
Do you ever deal with any mom guilt? Because the experience for your son is so different than the experience of your first three kids?
Not really, because I love my children. My children know I love them. Mm-hmm. But they also know that I was a child.
Okay.
So I think I didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And I was a damn good mom to them. Because mm-hmm. I cannot say that I had a lot of... I was a damn good mom to them and still am. Mm-hmm. Anything that they ever need, I'm the person that they call.
Yeah.
Every time. Mm-hmm. I don't care where they are on earth.
Do they help babysit?
Not help. Yes and no. So my daughter lives in New Orleans.
Okay.
One of my sons lives in Houston and one of my other sons lives here in Atlanta.
Okay.
When they come over, they'll hold them, but I'm not going to just leave them with them.
What?
Not in a bad way, but we take him
like everywhere.
Yeah, we don't really leave the house. Mm-hmm. We stay inside. We are 100% homebodies.
Mm-hmm. So unless you're working, do you work primarily from your office or from home?
My house.
From your house. So you don't have an issue with like work-life balance, being at work, spending time with your wife and your children.
I think anybody that says they don't have an issue with work-life balance is a liar.
Okay.
That's the truth. That's what I think. I don't even if you master, because I feel like when you 100% family, your business suffers. Mm-hmm. You 100% business, your family suffers. Mm-hmm. I think learning to do the ebbs and the flows. But even in order to learn to do the ebbs and the flows, you have to fuck up. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then it's a constant. Because then this year, the ebbs and the flows might be different from next year. Because what my child needs this year, he might need something different next year. So. Mm-hmm. It might be required that during line review season that I have to be more at home next year. Mm-hmm. Line review season this year, I had to be out. I got to go to CVS, Walmart. I have to be in person and tell these people. Mm-hmm. Right? But it might be required that I have to be home. So, yeah.
Do you feel like, curious, in your relationship specifically, you would think that Brat is the more masculine person, right? Mm-hmm. But every time I see her on the internet with you, she's crying, she's laughing, she's smiling, she's giddy. Do you guys have to deal with the issue of submission, the popular topic that's all over the internet?
No. I think I let her lead in what she's strong in, and she let me lead in what I'm strong in. Mm-hmm. She likes to be the domesticated person in the house. She enjoys the making sure that, you know, the house is clean, making sure the stuff is done. Like, she likes to do that. That is her thing. She likes, if they got a dish in there, she don't want me to wash it. Our clothes, she washes it. She likes to be that to me.
So, Miss Jessica, what you bring to the table, girl? She's doing everything at home. What you bring to the table?
I'm not So she doesn't do everything at home because I'm the bookkeeper, right? So I'm the person, right? So Brett has been a celebrity her whole entire life.
Okay.
She's had people doing her books her whole entire life. Brad does not. My wife probably doesn't even know the total of our bills.
Okay.
But she also might not. She doesn't. She makes some money, goes off to the side. She has a person to do her finances in general. Mm-hmm. Right. I, on the other hand, have always been my finance person. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to us and the best decisions to make, the best thing, like our best moves, even down to her hair care line. Mm-hmm. Right. The thing that she had with me, I give her residuals off of that.
Okay.
So she makes quite a bit of money. Mm-hmm. So I am the business side of our relationship.
You're the business side. Do y'all buy into the 50-50, like, financially in the relationship?
No. Mm-mm. No, because I felt like there's some stuff that she'll have way more than me, and there's some stuff I'll have way more than her.
Okay.
Because I'm spoiled now. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to wash a dish. She's spoiled because she's also not going to have to worry about anything.
You can tell, you even before you had your son, like the way you showed up for your kids, you're just a very loving mom, loving person. And it translates the way you love Brad, like you just exude love and good energy. And it's amazing to just watch and see. You have I had to reach out to you for one of my clients about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And said, Jessica, this is up your alley. This is your area of expertise. We need this help. You know, can you help? It didn't take you 5 minutes to literally, like you said, that gentleman who was a provider, a product maker at mm-hmm. the time that he gave you his manufacturer. You literally mm-hmm. gave the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, she's different. She's very different. What makes you say, look, I'm not afraid to share my sources with you. You can't do what I do. Like, you were just so giving.
Somebody did the same for me.
Mm.
And not only that, but you know, a lot of people say, I want to see people win. I want to see people win. I really do.
You mean it?
Yeah, I really do. It does something for me because it makes me, and then it's not, oh, not until you get to my spot. I want you to pass me because then it's going to inspire me to pass you. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just, I want you to win. I want to know that it's possible mm-hmm. to do it. Because if nobody does it before you, how do you know it's possible, right? Mm. So there is the trailblazers, but then it's great to have people in front of you and you like, damn, if that person did this, I know I could do it, you know?
Yeah. I have three questions for you, kind of like rapid fire. And I'm going to ask these questions and they're easy. They're not, you know, anything. Actually, it's four questions. Number one, what do you love most about being a wife?
This answer is going to sound so selfish. I like being a pampered princess. I do.
Okay. You like being a pampered princess.
And the main reason I like that is because my wife likes making me that way. That makes her happy.
Y'all be competing, though.
Yeah.
Jessica, you do the same thing.
I know.
You still feel pampered even though you pamper back equally?
I am. Like, I don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I just have to be home. Like, when people at my house say, like, hey, you know what a broom is? I don't. I live here and I don't. I really don't. No, I'm serious. I don't. Can you tell me where to find the towels? I can't.
You cannot.
I don't have to put away the towel. I don't. No, for real. I tell people all the time. I said, I live here, but I don't know where shit at. I don't.
That's a pampered princess lifestyle. Okay.
So that's why a lot of people are like, you always buying for your wife. I sure the fuck am, and I sure the fuck will continue.
Because she holds
it down. I ain't got to do shit.
Do y'all have housekeepers?
We do.
Okay. But in between, Brad likes to take care of
Brad is the person that handles the housekeepers, though.
She manages everything for the house.
Yeah.
You mean it. Okay. Second question. What is your favorite product other than, what's your favorite product from Kaleidoscope?
I know what you're going to say other than.
Uh-huh.
It would have to be the hero. It would have to be the thing that's kind of worn the crown for a little while. Mm-hmm. It would have to be the Miracle Drops.
What's so special about the Miracle Drops?
I think it's a very universal product. And a lot of people struggle with hair growth, whether mm-hmm. it's your hair being fuller, longer. You did a DIY on YouTube and pulled your damn hair out, you know, whatever it is. It's just like it's like a win-win. It doesn't matter your gender, doesn't matter your race. Everybody seems to want hair growth, right?
Yeah.
So,
do you consider Kaleidoscope your baby?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't play behind it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I heard someone say, and I can't remember who it is, but I was at a conference and he gets on stage and he says, the first problem that you have is that you think that your business is your baby and your business is not your baby. Because would you ever sell your baby? Right. One day, many entrepreneurs, many CEOs, the goal is to go on and sell the company. Do you think that, how do you think that impacts your thoughts about it still being your baby?
I feel like both of those things can reign to be true.
Okay.
I feel like somebody can consider their business their baby and still go to acquisition.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is in order to get to acquisition, you have to nurture your company so much that it has to see heights.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get them heights if you're not putting the love, attention, time, money into the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the people that are the most passionate about their company and calling their company their baby are the ones that actually have the option to, you know, be acquired or have the option to have those kind of conversations where investors are going to be into them. Yeah. Now, when it comes to the separation of it, I think you being a mature adult about what you're doing, what your legacy lives, I mean, will leave, or is it better? Because I feel like the acquisition discussion is so faux pas in the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people don't understand that sometimes holding on to a business could actually hinder it if you're not in a position to be able to grow it. If you don't have the resources, you don't have the money. Like every year, every time I have to scale, it's a little bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Scaling the first time was when I did the shop. It was $1,800. Scaling after that, it might have been $100,000. Scaling after that, it might have been $400,000. Scaling after that, might have been $900,000. Scaling most recently is 2 to 3 million, where I might have to take a chunk, buy a whole bunch of inventory. But scaling at 20 million, if I don't have the capital, then what happens?
Yeah.
So I just feel like if more people understood the process, which unfortunately they don't, because the people that get to that point are the 1%ers.
Mm.
So then you can't expect 98% of the people, you know, well, it's 99, but let's just put in a 10% buffer for people that do understand. You can't expect for them 80% of people to understand what's going on. I just wish it was a bigger conversation where more people understood the value and the value proposition of doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Am I doing something like that? I haven't considered it.
Mm.
I feel like I haven't taken this thing as far as I can yet. I feel like those conversations come when you take it as far as you can and you have to reach out for help.
Mm.
And not in a bad way, not like rescue me, but
right.
I'm so big. Oh my God, help me. Like I feel like I've been able to. Yeah. Hiring is crazy right now, but
that is obviously something that is heavy on your mind right now, the hiring process. And it's crazy. Everybody that I talk to that operates at your level, like many of the clients even that I work with, that's the number one. Like if you can solve this problem with team, you've solved 90% of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. When you think about your entrepreneurial journey building Kaleidoscope, give us one of the most pivotal moments that changed the game for you. And a moment that you would consider an absolute disaster.
One of the most pivotal moments. Okay. I'll take it back to, I was doing like social media promotion and hiring different comedians. And I had been trying to like work with different celebrities and I could never work with nobody. Like I was nobody. Cause when you small, you know, you small.
Right.
People don't know who you are. They don't. Right. So I reached out to Michael Blackson to see if he would do a video with me. He was going to be in New Orleans. And that one video,
mm-hmm.
where I ran up on him, he was in New Orleans. I ran up on him in a hotel and we did a little funny video. I said, I see you downstairs with that bald headed woman. Give her this. You know, it was funny. And it might have cost me, I don't know, a few thousand dollars at the time. That actually opened the door. That one video, I started getting the yeses that I had never been getting.
Yes.
And so it was a small thing probably to him, but I was able to run up on dozens of people after that. And that caused the thing that I don't know if you would follow me at the time, but that caused a thing where you always saw me running up on different celebrities. Mm-hmm. I got the yeses after that working with him. And then once you work with him and you work with somebody else and somebody else, now I got so many yeses, people tapping me. Hey, you want to run up on me too?
Yes. Would you ever go back to that style of marketing?
I feel like, you know how Oprah retired at a high?
Oh, it's so entertaining.
You know what I'm talking about, though? You know, it's like if you bring it back and it don't do the same thing, I feel like it's going to devalue it.
So that was just an era.
I like the disruptive marketing, but I feel like that particular thing
will devalue. If it does not do,
I feel like I would probably do one as a throwback, but it would have to be somebody so phenomenal that I could put the crown on it and walk away.
Okay. And one of the moments that you would consider a disaster?
There's so many.
Oh, that's a nugget, though. People need to know that.
Yes. A lot of people think that entrepreneurship is just all glitz and glam. There's so many. Mm-hmm. Let me try to reduce it down to since I've been to Atlanta.
Okay.
Since I've been to Atlanta in about 2020, and I think I spoke about this prior, I had a label disaster. It cost me about $600,000-$700,000. One of my employees copied and pasted the ingredients on different products. And we had already produced it. It had already got to be finished goods. And so it's just really expensive to undo and redo.
Mm-hmm.
There's out here in Atlanta, it gets cold. One of the pipes in our ceiling bust from the freeze, and it flooded my whole entire warehouse.
Wow.
But it didn't touch none of my inventory.
Okay.
So it left my money there.
It left what needed to be producing the revenue right there. Are you at the point now in your business where you are fulfilling in-house, like you operate out of the warehouse doing shipment and packaging and everything, or do you guys utilize like a 3PL?
Never. I did a 3PL one time. I'll never do it again.
Why?
It just was a bad experience. The people that I use shipped the wrong product. Lost some of our inventory. So I then had to, cause I didn't ship them everything I had, thank God. Mm-hmm. So I then, for about 3 weeks of orders, was just shipping out the orders from my warehouse after they supposedly shipped it, just to make sure I was good with my customer service. And that definitely cost me a lot of money.
Yeah. Because at that point you're technically shipping out double product.
Yes, I did because they weren't shipping properly. Wow. They had to start shipping people coffee. Cause you know, when you're in 3PL, they have other people's stuff.
Right.
So my customers, and it had my label on it, and the coffee was inside.
Not the kaleidoscope hair drops, and you get fresh ground coffee.
Yeah. So, no. But we've been shipping D2C since I started. So, okay. I tried 3PL. It wasn't even 3 months.
Okay.
I got a warehouse out here. A warehouse in Temple. It's like 40,000 square feet.
Okay. Good stuff. There are so many questions that I could ask you, but we got to wrap it up. If you could, the people who are watching this episode, these are people who are in pursuit of building their own one day, soon to be $80 million empire and more. They are likely looking for, they're probably looking at you finding themselves and what relates to your story to them, right? They are overcoming challenges. They are super excited. Some of them are super discouraged. If you could leave one word with these entrepreneurs who are watching you today, one piece of advice, what would that be?
I guess if God gave you the vision, you have to go after it.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes we don't pursue it because we tell people what the vision is and they don't see it. It could be the person that you're laying next to at night.
Mm.
It can be your closest friend. It could be your mom. It could be that. And it's not that they don't want to see you win, but it's your two eyes. Mm. So they're gonna jump on board later. So I feel like if you have something that you want to do, you should pursue it, no matter the non-support that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And just let them come to the party later.
Let them come to the party later. That's the name of the game right there. We couldn't close it out any better. Jessica, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I enjoyed this conversation. And Soon we'll have to bring you in for a part two. You bring so much value to the marketplace. Like, you're more than the owner and founder of a hair company. I believe that you have the ability to be written about in history books, especially in your industry. Like, this is what can be done. This is what's possible. These are the trials and tribulations that you can face. These are what the naysayers can say about you. Mm-hmm. This is how people can judge you, and you thrive and you prevail anyway. So I am looking forward to what's next for you.
Thank you.
And for all of you guys who are out here, you know what's next for you. Comment in the comments what your biggest takeaway was about this episode. What part of Jessica's story resonated with you the most? What part of Jessica's story made you say, you know what, I need to go just a little bit harder? And what part of Jessica's story made you okay with accepting where you are in your journey right now? Leave it in the comments. Let us know what stood out for you the most. And as usual, I will see you guys next week on our next episode of Full Transparency with Donnie. Bye. That was good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.